Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Islam Corner Radio on ATP Channel. I'm your host, Annie Cyrus. I do apologize for that few seconds of delay. I will do the usual call to action before we bring on our very, very special guest. So for those of you who are not subscribed, I would like to ask you to grab your cell phone and send a text message to the number 88202, and the text itself will be my name, A-N-N-I, and that will automatically subscribe you to our text alert system at American Truth Project, where for free you will receive notifications such as when I go on air on my weekly radio. Also, if you like, you can go to our website, americantruthproject.org, and sign up via email. So you receive our email, which I believe is twice a week, and you'll be informed of everything we do at ATP, which is our very best to educate our fellow Americans on all the dangers we are facing from every corner possible. Okay, I am very excited and very anxious to start this topic. So I'm going to go ahead and introduce our guest, which I'm sure you all know her very well. Today with us is Claire Lopez. She's the founder of Lopez Liberty LLC. She's also an expert when it comes to, I personally would say, anything you would need to know about September 11th, about jihad, terrorism, homegrown or not, and most importantly to me, which is very personal, is everything about Islamic Republic of Iran and its involvement with destruction and financing jihad. Hi, Claire.
Hey, Annie. Hi. So glad to be with you. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, absolutely my pleasure. As you know, I never, ever get enough of talking to you about all these important topics. So I appreciate you giving me your time today. And we have some very disturbing but very important topics to discuss, so why don't we just dive right in and start with my nightmare and millions of Iranians' nightmare that should also be a lot of Americans' nightmare. The newly selected, I would say, president of Islamic Republic of Iran. For those of our audience who are not aware, on Friday the 18th of June, the presidential election took place in Iran, but I can guarantee you there was no election, and I'm sure Claire can confirm that. It has been a rigged election for the last 42 years, but this one was definitely pre-selection, which we will get into details. But on Saturday the 19th, it was confirmed that Ebrahim Raisi is now going to be the new president of Islamic Republic of Iran, taking office on August. Claire, do you mind giving our audience a little bit of who he is and why he's my nightmare?
Right. Well, to start with, you're absolutely right, Annie, to call this in the Islamic Republic of Iran a selection, beginning with an S, and not an election. The individual who was named president after what has been an historically low voter turnout is Ebrahim Raisi. He has been the Iranian chief of the judiciary since 2019, and now he has ascended to the presidency. And some people think that he may even be looked at as a possible successor eventually to the supreme leader, the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei himself one day.
Yes, that's very true, and I can definitely confirm knowing the steps. He does have all the required credentials to possibly one day become the supreme leader of my motherland, which I hope and pray doesn't happen. But I actually posted, for the day, Saturday, I posted and I said, I said a different word, but I'm going to use a different word here on air. it is heartbreaking and disturbing and scary when a person with these nicknames within Iranian society, inside and outside, he's called Butcher of Tehran. He's also called the Executioner Judge. He's named by our mainstream media the Hardliner, and I can guarantee you people he's way more than a hardliner. He has bloods of thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of innocent people on his hand because he issued the execution order for these people. He also has few juveniles. I do personally remember I covered a case of a 14-year-old boy who was executed under his orders. But here's where it's very heartbreaking for me as an Iranian-American clerk. There is, as of right now, there is still talks that Biden handlers are going to continue negotiating the nuclear deal with Iran. And we both know, even though the president of Iran doesn't make foreign policies, but he plays a huge role as to where deals and foreign policies would go. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. What I would say first is a little bit more about the system itself in Iran for putting a president in power. There is a body in Iran called the Guardian Council. If I remember right, half of its members, six I think, half are appointed by the Majlis of the parliament and half by the supreme leader. Is that right, for a total of 12?
Correct.
Okay. Well, the Guardian Council has the authority under the Iranian system to approve or to disqualify anyone who wants to run for office in Iran. And in particular, in a presidential race like this one, the Guardian Council disqualified hundreds of other possible presidential candidates who wanted to run. And as they winnowed the field down, it became more and more obvious that Raisi was the regime's favorite, the supreme leader's favorite, and was destined to win. Also, I should add really quickly about the system, and it's totally rigged, of course. It is that system completely bars women, period. Women cannot run. Members of religious minorities, like the Baha'i, for example. And any candidates whose views are different than the approved views of the regime itself, those people cannot even run for president. So Raisi himself passed all those barriers because he was, in fact, the favorite of the supreme leader, Ali Khamenei, and the regime overall. And you're right, absolutely, first of all, to talk about the fact that his career is absolutely drenched in the blood of the Iranian people. His past includes these positions. He was the Tehran Prosecutor General between 1989 and 94. That means in a very important part of Iranian history. He was in charge of prosecutions of the Iranian people, including, I think that was around the time of the student uprising in Iran. He was the deputy head of the judiciary from 2004 until 2014. And that period of time, of course, covers the mass slaughter of the Green Movement protesters after the fraudulent 2009 selection that brought Mahmoud Ahmadinejad back to the presidency. But, you know, I should also mention, just as you say, that he has passed death sentences on minors, yes, as young as 14, you know, and thousands upon thousands. Some people don't even know how many, but the guesses, I shouldn't say guesses, the estimates, I guess, run as high as 30,000 people in the 1988 prison massacre, which he, Raisi, presided over. That prison massacre was of thousands and thousands. If it's 30,000, you know, it may be something less, but it's thousands and thousands of political prisoners. Many of them were Mujahideen-e Khalq, the largest, oldest, most dedicated of the Iranian opposition groups. And many of them were in the Iranian prisons at that time, and the 1988 prison massacre was under Raisi's tenure, under his supervision. And it's for that, in particular, among other things, though, that the United States Department of the Treasury sanctioned Raisi in 2019 for that role that he played in the prison massacre. So all of this by way of background. And yes, now our own administration, the new one in the White House, is practically groveling on hands and knees to be, please, 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 allowed back into the 2015 nuclear deal with Iran, or the JCPOA, Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. Although I'll say the latest I've heard is that the talks that have been ongoing in Vienna for many weeks now have been suspended as of just a day or so ago, and people have gone home. So one can hope.
Most definitely. But I'm glad you brought up the whole point that he is under sanctions. And I'm almost positive, but you know way more than I do. So let me ask you this question. Worst scenario comes to life, and Biden handlers decide to still move forward and do this negotiation. Doesn't that mean Biden administration would have to lift those sanctions from Raisi?
Well, I mean, who knows what they would do or which, you know, laws of the United States government they would flout. But the sanctions remain, first of all. The U.S. Department of the Treasury sanctions against Raisi, the new president of the Islamic Republic of Iran, remain. To deal directly with him in any way would be counter, therefore, to U.S. law.
Exactly. Thank you.
Yes.
So they have to not only break the law, which is very usual for Democrats to do, and we're going to get to that in a minute, but they are, I guess my biggest frustration, Claire, is how is it even on the table? How is our government okay dealing with a man who should be on trial for crimes against humanity? How did we get here?
I'm as tongue-tied as you are, how they could possibly even think of going forward with him as president. Now, he doesn't take office until August, as you say, that being a couple of months from now. But between now and then, the Biden administration is going to have to figure out what it's going to do as regards any talks that may resume. As we've said, they've been suspended at this particular time, and delegates have gone home. But in any case, I mean, pursuing a renewal of that nuclear deal from 2015, the JCPOA, is futile in itself. I mean, even to just to begin with, partly because that deal completely ignored Iran's previous violations of not just the Nuclear Nonproliferation Agreement, to which it remains a signatory to this day. But it's then and till now ongoing, obvious, recorded, documented pursuit of a deliverable nuclear weapons program. But then secondly, the point is that in the time since 2015, we're now here in June of 2021, the Iranian regime has pushed forward with so many violations of the JCPOA itself, to include bringing online more advanced, more modern, faster centrifuges, all the way up to Generation IR-6, as they call it, and beyond, testing anyway, They have enriched more uranium than allowed under the JCPOA. They have enriched uranium up to the 60% mark. 60% might sound like, well, they're not really there yet. Weapons grade is over 90%. Yes, true. But you can make a nuclear device out of 60% enriched uranium. You can do it. Ideal is over 90%. But you can do it with 60%. And they've openly admitted that they're doing this. The IAEA, that is the International Atomic Energy Agency, the monitoring body of the United Nations for nuclear programs around the world, has confirmed that indeed Iran is enriching to 60% level, as well as many other violations of both the NPT, Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, and the JCPOA, to bring Iran back to that agreement, flawed as it was, would mean that they would have to verifiably destroy centrifuges, destroy enriched uranium. That's just not going to happen. But the other part of this that's so disturbing is that Iran has been running a clandestine nuclear weapons program since the late 1980s, before the death of the Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini in 1989. So at least by 1988, they had already begun this clandestine program, which remained out of sight, at least publicly, and to the IAEA, as far as I know, until August of 2002, when the Iranian opposition group, the National Council of Resistance of Iran, blew the lid off the program with simultaneous press conferences in both Paris and in Washington, D.C., and revealed with satellite imagery and other data the existence of places like Natanz, the enrichment facility, Isfahan, the Kaylee Electric Plant, and so many more since then, too. So the JCPOA completely ignored the fact that there was a clandestine nuclear weapons program, also, by the way, now attested to in the documents spirited out of Tehran by the Israeli Mossad with local Iranian assistance, of course, a few years ago, and the revelations in those documents of the ongoing clandestine nuclear weapons program named by the Iranians the Ahmad Plan. So, all of that notwithstanding, that the Biden administration still wants to please crawl on hands and knees over broken glass to please be allowed back in to the deal suggests, well, I don't even know what it suggests, that they've got to know all of this. But that means they're disregarding it, that they don't care. And that is dangerous. That is deeply dangerous for American national security, for the security of our allies, friends, and partners in the region, foremost among them, of course, Israel, and the stability of the entire region, if not the world. So to make sense out of it, I can't even begin.
I'm sure you know I'm on the same boat with you there, but here's what I was thinking the other day. It doesn't shock me. It breaks my heart, but it doesn't shock me because we both know this new president, Raisi, as I said, with the nicknames, with the background, with the resume, how he built his career, how he was handpicked by Khamenei, how he was trained. He can easily resemble people such as Hitler. He can resemble people such as, I'm drawing a blank, the leader of Marxist.
Karl Marx, Lenin, Stalin,
all of them. He literally is the modern day of them, which is a good connection to our main topic today. He is just like them, mentality, emotion, training. But I think for me, on a biased end of it, he has one extra icing on the cake, which is the Islam in his head.
Well, let me pick up on that point that you make, which is exactly spot on. The affiliation between the senior ruling leadership of Iran, in particular some of the top clerics, the Ayatollahs, and Moscow, and the KGB. And here's the connection. Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, the current supreme leader, I don't know if people know this, is a graduate of Patrice Lumumba University in Moscow. It's got a new name now. It's called Friendship University for quite some years now. But it's a place where the KGB would troll among the students, many of them on scholarship from third world countries across the world, Asia, Africa, Latin America, Middle East, etc., would troll among them for recruits to be recruited, because those students with that education and that that degree they would leave Moscow with would be prime candidates to rise in the systems, the politics, the, you know, the ruling elite of their own countries when they went back home again. And indeed, so it has happened in Iran. There are extremely close connections between the KGB and the ruling Iranian elite. There's a whole website addressed to this, as a matter of fact, that is by the name of Comrade Ayatollah, which is also, by the way, the same name as a book, very extensive, long book, unfortunately only in Farsi so far for those of us who may not speak Farsi. Amir Abbas Fakhrovar, who was a leader of the student revolution back in Iran, is the author of that book and of the website. And he put together the evidence of the close connections between the ruling Islamic clerical class of Iran and the KGB and Moscow.
Exactly. Now that's the thing. When you say they don't care, they being, you know, the Biden administration, they never cared. By they, I mean world leaders. That's why all of this, as in our history, they never cared. They shook the hands of these, I call them monsters. I'm sure you have a more profound name for them. They shook their names. They did photo ops with them, and they made deals with them. Now, let's conclude on the Raisi part by quickly hinting at what you brought up, which was what I don't think even Biden administration can understand what a Raisi as president of Iran could mean for Israel. What are your thoughts on that? Where will that relationship go to?
I think they know perfectly well, which is why they're enacting the policy they're enacting. If we look at the the Biden administration and the appointees that have been made to various positions, I mean, I'll name just one, Ariane Tabatabai. Ariane Tabatabai has been appointed to an advisory position within the Department of State, the Arms Control and Disarmament Bureau, and her immediate family inside of Iran is reported to be close to the current president of Iran's inner circle, that being Hassan Rouhani. That's just one example. Many others appointed to senior positions in this Biden administration are openly opposed. They show open animosity to Israel, to the survival, to the existence of the Jewish state of Israel, and animosity to a number of Arab neighbors in the region. Who, for example, came together in the Abraham Accords, either openly, like Bahrain, the United Arab Emirates, Sudan, Morocco, and or supportive of those accords, maybe behind the scenes a little bit, as we all expect the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia has been, but in complete opposition to any of that normalization of relations with Israel. That's who runs the Biden administration. They know exactly what they're doing.
They do. They do, and it's a scary. I know I say we're going to conclude on that chapter, but sometimes I just can't help but to sit here and think they made one mistake after Obama, and I don't know if it was a miscalculation or what it was, but we caught a break there for 4 years, but they're picking up right where they left off with Obama administration to finish the job, which on that I will bring it to. Let's talk about the red, black, green axis, Claire. I have mentioned this on my page a few times, and I have many people saying, what is that? So let's just start there. What is red, black, green axis?
Okay, sure. Well, it's a term that some of us have taken to using, a term that perhaps I heard for the first time from our good friend and colleague Jim Simpson, who has just recently come out with a brand new book about Karl Marx. But that's where I might have first heard the term red-green axis. Later, we've added black. Red stands for the communist, Marxist, Leninist, Maoist element of the axis, which is an axis of animosity to the United States of America, our republic, our constitution, our system of law and order. That would include, the red part would include Antifa. It would include Black Lives Matter movement, both of which are Marxist. Black Lives Matter movement, also openly Maoist. And then the black leading right into there is the Black Lives Matter movement. And by the way, each of these is a network of groups. Not just one group in any category, but an entire network of reds, to include Antifa, Revolutionary Communist USA, World Workers Party, and so many more. Black Lives Matter movement, the black part of the axis, likewise is an entire network of organizations affiliated. And yes, there's crossover with the red. And then finally, the green stands for Islam. And here in the United States, the vanguard of the Islamic movement, that's what they call themselves, is the Muslim Brotherhood and its many, many front groups. And they're the green. The Muslim Brotherhood front groups in this country, for example, are very closely, openly, avowedly supportive of, connected to the Black Lives Matter movement. So it truly is an axis. It truly is an alignment of enemies who hate the United States of America, our foundational principles, everything we stand for, the Constitution, law and order. Each of them seeks to instigate chaos, such a situation of chaos that the country collapses. And then out of that chaos, each of them, yes, with varying and different ideologies, but each, I guess, thinks that it will be the one to come out of the chaos and be able to seize power for itself.
Well, thanks for that detailed explanation. Let's just start, because, I mean, you know, I'm biased and I'm Islamophobe, so we have to start reverse. Let's just start with green. We already established the danger that this new president is bringing, you know, the national security of America being in danger. But here's what I covered last week. Well, everybody's familiar with, you know, Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, Keith Ellison, Linda Sarsour, and list goes on different departments. But now they kind of finished the whole alliance by this very brand new Muslim judge who was confirmed for a lifetime position and a lifetime salary, which I'm going to put a little insert in there. Please listen, fellow Americans who are listening. He will have no choice but to dedicate part of that salary that we are paying him towards Islamic tax known as zakat. So without you even knowing, you are contributing to Islamic tax. That was a side note. But we have this Judge Qureshi, who was confirmed by Senate as, I believe, Federal Judge Article 3 two Thursdays ago. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Am I overreacting to this, or yes?
I was just going to say yes to the U.S. District Court in New Jersey. That's where he's been appointed. It's a federal-level judge appointment.
Yes, but am I overreacting to this, or are you
looking
on the fact that Go ahead.
You know, you're not overreacting at all. Number one, I think it's very interesting to note his last name, Quraishi. Quraishi is the name of the tribe of Muhammad, the founder of Islam. Now, I don't know if he actually descends from Muhammad or not, but that's his name. Just a fun fact there. But not overreacting at all, and here's why. If he is a devout, faithful, practicing Muslim, that means that he is pledged, he is sworn, in fact, to obey and to uphold Islamic law, which is Sharia. And as we know, many, many elements of Sharia are directly antithetical to the U.S. Constitution, to which, as well, now Judge Quraishi took an oath. So the question is, and by the way, let me insert here a little plug for a book by Dr. Stephen Kirby, K-I-R-B-Y, Stephen Kirby, back in December of 2019. The book is called Islamic Doctrine versus the U.S. Constitution, and in very clear, simple language lays out these contradictions. To which oath is Judge Quraishi now going to be faithful? It can't be to both, because we know that they're antithetical to one another. So when a conflict arises, and certainly a conflict, more than one conflict, will arise in the course of his tenure in this position as a U.S. District Court judge, which oath will he keep?
Well, we all know which oath Rashida Tlaib, Keith Ellison, and Ilhan Omar are keeping. I don't think there's even a question. I mean, I honestly thought about it, Claire, the other day. I'm like, what's going to happen if he's facing some sort of case that is, let's say, one side is a Jew? What is he going to do? Is he going to earn himself a fatwa?
I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, I'm just curious as to, is he going to go against Quran and Sharia and defend the Jew and earn himself a fatwa and a bounty on his head? Or is he going to just go for it and dismiss the Jewish guy or Jewish company or whatever to protect Sharia? That's my only question.
Well, I mean, It's even much more mundane and everyday cases that could come before him involving things like marriage, divorce, child custody, very ordinary sorts of cases. But if he follows his oath to the United States Constitution in rulings that we can expect will come before his bench, then he violates Islamic law. And so we get back to his oaths. He's taken two oaths. And to which is he going to be faithful in a situation where there is a conflict? I think the American people need to think about this. I mean, it's too late. He's already appointed. But this is a very serious question.
And I'm glad you said too late, he's been already appointed or confirmed. But I think here's my question before we move on to black and red axis or part of the axis. What is there anything, Claire, we can do as average American people? I mean, considering we the people, is there anything left for us to do today to reverse any of these seriously damaging moves? Or is there not?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And this is what I say when I'm talking to audiences all over the country, which I've been doing. And that is to become involved at the local level. First of all, to become informed, which thank you to all of our listeners, because that's exactly what you're doing. And the viewers and listeners to Annie's other programs, informed first and engaged then, after. And I see it happening. People are becoming engaged in ways to support candidates at the very local level, library board, school board, city council, and on up, you know, through the levels of elected office. They are getting into the races themselves. Some of them are actually standing for office for election themselves. Certainly, they are coming together, as I've never seen people do quite before this. Tea Party comes to mind, but I think this goes even beyond it. And part of it may have to do with the fact that parents and kids were both kind of stuck at home last year. And parents, maybe many for the first time, had the chance to see what their kids were being taught. And it shocked them, it horrified them, and it made them furious. And this is a good part of why we're seeing such local engagement now. And that's what has to happen, because this isn't going to be fixed at the federal level, obviously. But it will be fixed at the local level, the we the people level. And so that's what I encourage people to do in any way you're able, whatever your time and situation may permit, to become engaged, attend a school board meeting, attend a city council meeting, or send in your comments if there's an opportunity to do that. Call into radio shows. Call into TV shows. Write a little op-ed for your own local outlet, your own local newspaper, and get behind candidates who might be jumping into races for the first time who support your values and your principles.
I'm so glad you said that. I'll agree. But it is good to know there are still ways for us to reverse. Well, I hope we reverse it before it gets to where it's not reversible. But let's move on to the part of red, black, green axis. So we had President Trump in the office, and there were cities burning down because Black Lives Matter movement and all that charade the whole summer. And then Biden administration comes along, and they're in office for good enough of time to fix all of this. But none of that went away. There is a still Black Lives Matter movement. There is a still apparently systematic racism in government and America. So what do they want?
They want complete collapse of the system. This is why I said before that even though there is ideological difference among these different elements of the axis, red and black and green, their cause for unity comes from their agreement on the singular objective before all of them right now, and that is the complete collapse of the United States government and system and constitution. And the reason that the rioting goes on, and certainly we've seen very recent images from Portland, Oregon, and other places too, the reason the revolution goes on is because the revolution's not done, and it doesn't have to do with one party or another. It's not about a Republican Party, a Democrat Party. It's about collapse of the entire system. And for those who may have been able to read up a little bit on the Communist Manifesto, let's say, the writings of Marx or of Lenin, or just the writings of the Black Lives Matter movement, which are online, and if you have to, go to the Wayback Machine, because for the stuff they've scrubbed, it's never really gone, it's still back there. You can read in their own words what their intent is. Violent revolution to overthrow the entire system. Now, that doesn't even mean that they've got some bright and shiny utopian vision of what they're going to replace it with that will be so much better than what we have now. No. When you read Karl Marx and others, and by the way, I've just finished another book I'm going to recommend, and that is Paul Kengor's excellent book called The Devil and Karl Marx. I'm currently reading Jim Simpson's new book about Karl Marx, too. You read those, and you realize that they don't have an alternative in mind, even though, you know, the misled kids on the college campuses are starry-eyed about the idea of socialism and sharing and communalism and whatever. That's not really what they're talking about. They are talking about complete destruction. They're talking about the total destruction, the tearing down of the entire system, and not about any kind of, you know, nice replacement. Let me read the last paragraph, very last page, last paragraph of the Communist Manifesto. The communists disdain to conceal their views and aims. They openly declare that their ends can be attained only by the forcible overthrow of all existing social conditions. I mean, they told us. That's, by the way, dated 1848. They told us. And it absolutely is complete destruction. It is nihilism. It is not a replacement with something nicer and better. No.
Yeah, that part I'm pretty sure, because I remember connecting it back to green Islam. I wasn't born, but I do remember when my grandmother would tell me that even though the entire revolution and invasion of my motherland was orchestrated and planned and all that, but when Khomeini landed in Iran and was interviewed, asked about what's happening, the only thing he kept repeating was, we're going to have Sharia constitution. That was it. There was nothing else. Of course, it wasn't better. It was horrible what he was planning to do, but he didn't even have a plan. But since we were talking, I have never been too much of an expert, or I don't claim to know much about Black Lives Matter movement, but I'm pretty sure one or all three founders of Black Lives Matter movement are openly claiming to be communists. Am I correct on that?
Yes, you are correct. So the three founders are three African-American women, Alicia Garza, Opal Tometi, and Patrice Cullors. Now, Patrice Cullors, recently after journalists revealed that she had amassed a very nice real estate portfolio of at least four homes totaling millions of dollars in value, has supposedly separated herself from the Black Lives Matter movement. But nevertheless, yes, each one of those women comes out of a background of participation in preceding organizations like the Freedom Road Socialist Organization, Liberation Road, and other organizations explicitly Marxist, Leninist, communist. And then, of course, there was the video of a few years ago by Patrice Cullors, in which she openly declared that she herself and Alicia Garza, at least those two, were trained Marxists. So they don't hide this stuff. They're not disguising themselves. They're telling us exactly who they are and what they believe. As I read to you from the Communist Manifesto, they don't hide it. The problem is that people either don't know about it or don't believe it when they hear it.
I know. It seems like even on the Islamization part, a lot of times, Claire, I'm on a stage and I'm talking to people and I look at their faces and I can see that they are terrified of what they're hearing, but they're not understanding that it's right around them. It's like this little bubble around everyone that is somehow protecting their imagination to tangibly grasp the idea.
Well, the other part of it also is the failure of the U.S. educational system and the failure to teach history, either our own or world history, accurately. So people really don't know what happened in Russia in 1917 or how exactly Mao Zedong took over China in 1949 and what he did since then and his successors have done since then. They don't know what's actually going on even right now down in Venezuela. They don't know any of this. I mean, they're hard-pressed to find, I don't know, Mississippi on a map, never mind Venezuela. So it's a failure of the U.S. educational system to inform people, to arm them with the facts of, you know, what communism really is and how it works out when it's imposed upon a people. And you know, it's not, we didn't do it right, we'll do it better next time. No, it has never, ever worked and has always, every single time, left piles of dead bodies behind it.
Yeah, that's very, very fair statement. And I understand you said that the red, black, green axis does not have the same ideology, but they just have temporary unified goal, which is taking down our, you know, well, basically, since you were mentioning books, here's another book I strongly always suggest everyone to read, United in Hate. United in Hate by Dr. Jamie Glazov.
Mm-hmm.
That explains the unholy alliance of the left and Islam, which was the red-green axis. It's basically, I always use the term he used, which is they just want to burn down America. That's it. But here's my random thought of Annie Cyrus. Okay, God forbid, somehow they manage to burn America down. Then what will happen between the red, black, green axis? What are they going to do to each other? Because they're not going to stay friends. I'm pretty sure of that. They can't.
I think you're right. And you know, then there'll be a falling out. You can already see Black Lives Matter movement coming apart at the seams. You know, when people like Patrice Cullors don't live up to the, at least, narrative of what communism is supposed to be, and in fact she's a rather rapacious capitalist at heart, you can see things coming apart. You know, I mean, go back to the Russian Revolution again. I mean, think about the original, you know, group that tried to bring down the Russian government and succeeded. They fell out among themselves. I mean, think to Stalin and his years, certainly in the 1930s, you know, the huge purge. I mean, he purged thousands and thousands and tens of thousands of his own countrymen, many of whom had been, you know, his I don't know what you would call them, partners in crime. So it'll always come to that in the end. They will fall out among themselves, yes. But each one, at this point in time, now, each one thinks that, you know, they're the one that's going to rise to the top of the heap, I guess, and you know, be in charge after the collapse, which is what they hope to instigate.
100% agree with everything you said. Now, let me put my look into the future based on at least history and facts. I think both red and black people should look into green people. The only movement that has not collapsed and gained momentum and power would be the Islamic power from 1400 years ago to today. Any land they have conquered, they have conquered. And I think that's where, I don't know if you would agree or not, Claire, but I say the biggest danger we're facing out of all the dangers is the Islamization. It's the infiltration of our government by Islam. It's the fact that Muslim Brotherhood members are walking across our Congress today. Because these people don't go away. They don't have a fallout. They stick to the plan, which is jihad, global caliphate, and 72 versions at the end of the day. What do you think of that? Am I too biased here?
I think you're absolutely right about the cohesiveness of Islam over the centuries. And if it comes to, you know, a final shootout at the OK Corral, I don't know which would come out on top. The forces of communism, Leninism, Marxism, Maoism, or the forces of Islam? I really don't know. The forces of communism have only been around, you know, for a couple hundred years or so. So there's no comparison with 1,400 years of Islam. But in a final showdown, I don't know. I don't know. But nevertheless, I mean, we're talking about, you know, two horrible outcomes, you know, two forces that are deeply inimical to the values of Western civilization and our own, you know, American constitutional republic.
Agreed. And I really wish that my fellow Americans who are deeply involved with this Black Lives Matter movement could just look for 1 second and come to realize how badly and poorly they are being abused by two very inhuman movements. And they would just stop, because they are giving both communists, Marxists, Leninists, and Islamists, they're giving them a lot of power. They're giving them, they're scoring a lot for them. And they don't realize how badly they're just being, neither side care for them. And we know that. Mohammed had black slaves. To this day in Islamic Republic of Iran, they have black slaves. And communists don't care if you're black or red or yellow or white. It's communism, right?
Yes,
how
you
do
are
we
right.
How do we get them to see that? I understand. I get it. Mainstream media has literally whispered in their ear, but I'm sure there's a way for us to show them or wake them up. What do we do? How do we do it?
You know, thanks to programs like this radio show of yours, Annie, you know, the programs that Jamie Glazoff airs, the programs, you know, at the American Truth Project, and our own speaking, and the speaking of, I would say, a lot of other very well-informed people. Trevor Loudon comes to mind, and others around the country. I think people are beginning to realize, when I talk with audiences, I see more understanding. Now, yes, of course, that's a self-selected audience that came, you know, to hear me, right? So they're self-selected. But when you think about how few it takes, percentage-wise, to mount a revolution, whether our own American Revolution back in 1776, when maybe one-third of the population at the time in the colonies was engaged in that revolution against the British Crown, or you think about the small band, the faction of Lenin's political party, the Bolsheviks, although Bolshe means more, Mensha means less, the Bolsheviks were the bigger faction of the political party. But overall, each of these is a very small percentage of the overall population. When you think how few it takes to mount a revolution, it also takes fewer than you might think to stand up to that revolution in the case of the communist one, you know, or to push back on what's happening in our own country right now. And I see that happening. I see it happening at the local level. I see it happening among ordinary, everyday American citizen patriots who maybe had not ever been engaged before, but they are now, and I'm seeing it happen.
I really hope so, and I would like to add that I feel sometimes like it wouldn't hurt if all of us on the right, or conservatives, Republicans, patriots, Americans, American lovers, whatever we want to title ourselves, we need to be united a little bit more. We need to put aside our differences on the small things like what color I like and what color you don't, and get a stronger, be louder. We still do have a constitution that allows us under our First Amendment to peacefully petition our government. We have the right to petition our government. We have the right to petition our Senate and ask them why they were comfortable confirming, verbally at least, Muslim judge who will face conflict and they have no idea which way he's going to go. We at least have the right to petition them. So let's do that. We at this point, we have so much to lose that being afraid and waiting for someone else to do it for us is just not an option at all. Sorry for that long rant, Claire.
No rant at all. No, you're exactly right. And here's something else that I think could have, should have been done, and that is if it's at all possible to reach out to one's representatives, especially those in Congress who may sit on Senate confirmation hearings, for judges like Judge Qureshi now, to inform those representatives of the issues before them. I'm sure, I mean, dollars to donuts, Those senators who sat on that confirmation hearing for Judge Qureshi, they have no idea what Islamic law is or Sharia. No idea. But if enough constituents could politely, clearly, articulately let them know, maybe the next time there'd be a few more pointed questions.
Absolutely agreed. We are coming to last minutes of our program. So, Claire, last words goes to you. What do you want our audience to take away from this discussion?
Well, I'm first of all thankful that you've all joined us to listen to it and to become better informed about these issues. And I hope you take to heart what we were talking about in terms of becoming engaged at the local level as your own circumstances, your schedule permit. You know, to be engaged at the local level, I think, is the most important priority right now in the country. I am not dismissing our federal level, and I just talked about reaching out to congressional representatives. Yes, even more important, I think, is probably getting engaged at the local level to the best of your ability to do that.
Absolutely, 100% agreed. And here is the very last question for you. Where do our audience go to follow you, support you, and learn more from you?
Well, I have radio interviews, other interviews, webinars, written pieces posted at various different places, Citizens Commission on National Security, of course, at the American Truth Project. Many of my interviews you may find at Jamie Glazoff's Gang. I've also been publishing there, for example, this year, a series of four articles about critical race theory at the Front Page magazine, another project of the David Horowitz Freedom Center. Let's see, where else? Sometimes at the World View Weekend, that is Brandon House's platform online. And then I'm online on social media at Claire M. Lopez on Twitter, on Facebook. I've been on Parler, but I just haven't had time to keep up much there lately. And I also have a blog at Newsmax, but I need to get cracking there to get some more writing published. But those are the places. You can also sign up to follow my published pieces, which are sort of aggregated, if you will, at a free subscription. You do have to register and subscribe, but called Pundicity, P-U-N-D-I-C-I-T-Y, Pundicity. And that's a way to get everything sort of in one place.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Claire. I appreciate your wisdom, your time, and, you know, I, on a personal level, I am grateful for you because you dig deeper than anyone else to expose the evil we face today, so I appreciate you.
Thanks so much, Annie. It's been great to be with you.
Absolutely, and to our lovely audience, thank you so much for staying with us until now. Remember, if you haven't done so yet, grab your cell phones and send my name, A-N-N-I. Send it as a text format to the number 88202, and you will be signed up for free to our text alert system where you will get all of our information and notifications for free. If you don't want to do the text, that is not a problem. All you got to do is go to americantruthproject.org. And you can sign up using your email address. That is also a free subscription. While you're on our website, americantruthproject.org, remember we are a 501c3 organization, which means we're a nonprofit organization. You can consider making a 100% tax-deductible donation, which will help us continue doing what we do. With that being said, stay safe, stay vigilant, and I will talk to you again next Monday, same time, same channel. Bye-bye.